The Fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. And you thought you were grumpy in the morning. Here's Jeff Blair.
All right, leave it to the New York Yankees. And the day that Roy Halladay signed a one-day contract with the Toronto Blue Jays so he can retire with the team, the Yankees go out and purchase the memory of Nelson Mandela. Did you know that, Andrew Walker?
It sounds very Yankee-ish.
Yes, yes, Andrew. The Yankees announced on Monday that they are going to give Mandela a plaque in Monument Park, along with Ruth, DiMaggio, and Gehrig. And look, the Yankees have upstaged everybody for years, and it's true that one of Mandela's first large public events in the U.S. after his release from Robben Island was at Yankee Stadium, so the move is no surprise. But it does sum up the strange sort of status that has settled over the Toronto Blue Jays this winter. Instead of moves, the narrative has very quietly shifted to how good Brandon Morrow has looked. And honest to God, folks, if I didn't know better, I'd swear Alex Anthopoulos is deliberately trying to dampen our expectations.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say to Jeff? Say it to his face. Through Twitter, at Glow Blair, or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
All right, I've got a lot to talk about today. Dwayne Casey, the head coach of the Raptors, who will play the San Antonio Spurs tonight, will join us later on in the show. We'll talk about the newest acquisitions and how the Raptors plan on working them in. We're going to deal with Jerome Iginla's return to Calgary, NHL Board of Governors meeting. Eddie Olchuk, our regular NHL analyst on Tuesdays, will join us. We'll talk about James Neal's suspension. But first out of the gate, John Paul Morosi is the national baseball writer for Fox Sports. And here's where I want to go with our phone conversation today. We started it yesterday with the announcement that Roy Halladay signed the one-day contract with the Blue Jays. And we asked the question, got a lot of response, didn't get a chance to get around it to everybody. Just going to ask a simple question about Roy Halladay. We know the number, his name will go up in the level of excellence. Frankly, his number should be retired too, but that's another topic. I want to know if you think Roy Halladay, if you think Roy Halladay goes into the Hall of Fame, and is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? And in addition to that, because it is the winter meetings, because the Toronto Blue Jays have, well, done nothing through a couple of days of the winter meetings. I mean, they've been hooked up in a couple of rumors. Got to ask the question. You heard me refer to it in my intro. You know, are you beginning to think that with all the talk about how good Brandon Morrow has looked, John Gibbons yesterday talking about how important the bench is, Alex Anthopoulos saying, you know, maybe we'll have to look at addressing the depth of our pitching as opposed to going after a front-end starter. The idea that the free agent market has been hamstrung by Masahiro Tanaka, that nothing may happen to January in that regard. I mean, I've got to ask you, give me your gut call. Do you think Alex has got a big move planned, a small move planned, or are you beginning to think that this may be the team, this may be the Toronto Blue Jays team, barring a minor addition or two, that you're going to see at spring training? 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Those are the numbers to call. On Twitter, you can reach me. My Twitter handle is at Glow Blair. So far to the winter meetings, the Blue Jays have spent most of their time being connected with rumors. Adam Lind to the Pittsburgh Pirates, which went nowhere apparently after the Blue Jays asked for Neil Walker. Terrific second baseman who'd be great in this ballpark. The Blue Jays connected in a three-way deal with the Texas Rangers, reportedly involving Sergio Santos. Some indication it may have been a deal involving Brett Anderson. Oakland and Texas pulled off a minor deal. There was talk that this Santos deal was a three-way deal. It fell by the wayside because one of the players failed a physical. We are led to believe it's not Sergio Santos. We don't know definitely, but one of the players involved failed a physical. So that's sort of the sum total of where the Blue Jays are right now. You add to that the fact that Alex dropped this little nugget yesterday about can't really see a deal involving a major position player. And I've got to ask you, are you concerned that that Alex may stand pat? John Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer for Fox Sports. He joins us live from sunny Orlando, home of the winter meetings. How you doing, Mr. Morosi?
Doing very well, Jeff. I have great aspirations today to actually step outside. That is my biggest goal for the day. Hasn't happened yet, but I'm hoping to take a little bit of a walk and get some fresh air, because as you know, come in the winter meetings, you're in the lobby pretty much the entire time.
Yeah, so, and you've got to get out of the Moose and Squirrel Resort every once in a while just to remind yourself that you are a living, breathing human being.
Very, very, very well said, Jeff. Very, very well said. There was a little Blue Jay talk there yesterday. I did hear that about Santos was all but traded. I'm not sure the third team. I'm not sure the player that flunked the physical. I am quite confident that player was not Santos. In fact, I was told Santos passes physical. So I think that deal, for whatever reason, went away because of somebody else that was involved in it. But to me, it shows that Texas was still interested in acquiring bullpen help, and in fact that the Blue Jays are somewhat comfortable with possibly parting with some of their bullpen help if it's going to get them the right pieces back. So I think it was more of an insight into what both teams are looking at right now.
John, is there any chance, do you think, that Brett Anderson was the player involved in this and that he may have failed his physical? Because now we're hearing that the Athletics have sort of let teams know that they, in fact, may hang on to him, which, you know, putting two and two together.
It's certainly possible. Yeah, it's certainly possible. We know Anderson has a long injury history. So obviously, for me, when you talk about Anderson's value, and I went and totaled up the number of innings he's pitched over the last 3 years. It was well under 190. I mean, he has not been healthy. And I think that when you talk about value, and if I'm going to trade a prospect piece or a good major league piece for a pitcher, I need to get some reliability there. And I think you have a guy like Jose Quintana with the White Sox, who no one talks about, mm-hmm. who actually put together a really good year this past year, and he threw 200 innings. And so he threw more innings in 1 year than Anderson has in the last three. So I think when you talk about reliability, that's one of the reasons why the White Sox are in a position to make one of the left-handed pitchers available, and including Sale, although I know the price on Sale is going to be very high. But if they don't trade Sale, they could trade Quintana and maybe kind of replenish some of their issues with their position player group. So I think Quintana is probably an interesting piece there for the Jays, frankly, because here's Quintana. He's a guy that's had success in a hitter-friendly American League ballpark, which is obviously what Rogers Center is as well. So it could be a fit there if they get together and figure out the prospects.
John, you know the people around the Blue Jays pretty well. You know a lot of Alex's assistants. You know Alex pretty well. Do you think there's a chance that he may, in fact, stand pat this winter?
You know, I think, Jeff, at some point in time, they have to get a pitcher, and they will. They need to get at least one starting pitcher and probably two. So I don't think he's going to stand pat in the end. I think that what we're seeing now is the overall market for pitching is so much delayed because we're all waiting on this Tanaka decision, which I think will probably happen in the next couple of days. So once that happens, then everything else is going to shake loose. Then I think Irvin Santana will go off the board at some point. Ubaldo Jimenez will go off the board at some point. Matt Garza. And also keep in mind, we don't know if our old friend A.J. Burnett's going to pitch or not. And that's another dynamic that has holed up the market. So I think there's a lot of questions there. I would say this too, Jeff. So much, I believe, of the pitching market is getting lucky with the right pitcher on a bounce back situation. We hear about Clayton Richards is a good bounce back candidate. Jason Hamill had a down year with the Orioles, but was pretty good 2 years ago. So it's a question of if Ubaldo had been a free agent at this time last year, you probably would have been able to have him for a song. And you have Scott Kazmir, obviously, with going independent ball and now getting a $22 million contract. There is so much variability in the pitching performance that it's all about gambling, I think. If you're not going to get the best guys, it's all about gambling on the right bounce-back guys, because it's just a very complicated time to look for pitching.
John Paul Morosi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. What is the status right now of negotiations with Shin-Soo Choo?
Great question. I think that of all the major names left, he might have the best chance to get wrapped up this week, just because I think his market is fairly well defined. And I think that the teams I'm hearing most on him, the Texas Rangers and the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks were very quietly in there on Carlos Beltran at the very end, did not get him. And I think that part of their plan is signing a free agent outfielder and then using some of their outfield depth and their pitching depth, guys like Eaton and Parra, Pollock maybe, to then go out there and acquire a pitcher. So I think that they can do it. They have very good prospects. They have Archie Bradley. They have Tyler Skaggs. They have a lot of good young pitching that they can really move if they want to get an ace-type pitcher. So I would say stay tuned on the Diamondbacks in Texas. They're going to have to get a bat to play left field. And they'd prefer probably that it would be right-handed power. Maybe Matt Kemp is still in play there. But obviously, Shin-Soo Choo would fit very well in left field for the Rangers. So I would say the teams I'm hearing the most right now, Jeff, the Rangers and the Diamondbacks.
John, what do you think happens with David Price?
I think he'll be traded eventually, Jeff. I really do. I think that because it's such an underwhelming market for starting pitchers in general, I mean, I think Tanaka's got a chance to come over from Japan and do very well. Irvin Santana, for me, is a guy that's proven he can get it done in the American League. But after that, there's not a whole lot of reliability, even with Garza and Jimenez. So to me, that's what puts in favor of Price being traded, just because there's just not – There's not that existence of other top candidates out there to get. So I do think Tampa's going to put him out there. I think Seattle's going to be involved. I think the Dodgers will be involved. I sort of doubt that they would trade him to the Yankees, but they do need starting pitching. So I do think Price will end up getting traded. I did hear the Diamondbacks like him as well. So I think a lot of possibilities for him to go, and I just think ultimately with the Rays business model, Jeff, when you look at the way that Matt Garza unfolded, James Shields, that's the way they do business. They, until they get a new ballpark, that's the way they have to do business, and so I think Price will be traded this winter.
John Palmarosi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times had a lengthy article on the weekend that kind of detailed the dysfunction within the Seattle Mariners organization. There's a lot of stuff that Jeff does. It was incredibly detailed, and I was going to say, I mean, it was almost there was so much texture to it, I guess is what I'm trying to say, that, you know, it's one of those stories you read and you are absolutely so convinced of the veracity of the story that there's no question about it. I know that the Mariners issued a press release yesterday, essentially saying we're not a dysfunctional organization. You know, they've signed Robinson Cano. They have to have a follow-up act to that. We all know that. They can't go into the season just with Robinson Cano. There's going to be another move. Has that article set back any of their off-season planning? Because it is a type of article, John, you know as well as I do, if I'm an agent, I'm reading that, and boy, you got to think twice about whether or not you want your player there.
It's a great question, Jeff, and I think on a certain level, we don't really know the answer yet. I think we'll see based on the way the rest of their off-season unfolds, and again, the one sort of cure-all for organizational dysfunction as a concern for players is to completely overwhelm them with a financial offer, and I think that's one thing they can do if they so choose. If they want to far overpay Nelson Cruz, and obviously in the trade area, the players have no say. So if they want to just give a big time prospect package to the Rays or David Price or the White Sox or Chris Sale, they can do that. But I think. I believe, Jeff, that the way that their franchise has been run for a decade plus, I think has really been the thing that's resulted in obviously the attendance dropping by about half in a decade. I mean, they really have become irrelevant. They've really struggled to market in their own city and nationally as well. So this is a team that I think really needs to spend money just to get players thinking about this team again. I think that if anything, it probably is even more so that case. But I really think the losing overall has forced players and agents to look at that franchise with a wary eye for a long time. And I also think that the Jeff story, which I think was very good and very detailed and very thorough and I think very fair, because everything was on the record for the most part, from Eric Wedge and Tony Blangino and other people that have been dismissed, that I think a lot of these things had maybe been whispered in the industry and were sort of known to agents, some of the issues there. But I think Jeff did a great job of putting it together, obviously, for the public's knowledge. And so I think that maybe there may be some agents that are dealing with them right now that weren't necessarily all that surprised by some of the things, at least, that came out in that story.
John, it was good of you to do this morning. Go out and get some sun or whatever, fresh air.
I'm going to try to get some scoops first, Jeff.
Scoops, no. Sun first, scoop second.
All right. I'll try.
Take care. Thanks for this.
Good talking to you. Thanks again, Jeff.
All right. That is John Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for Fox Sports. And, you heard me talk about the winter meetings in the past. And basically, you hang around a hotel lobby waiting for rumors, hoping you run into somebody who tells you a rumor or has some news for you. That's essentially it, folks. Large cup of coffee, digital recorder, breath mints. Find a comfortable chair to sit in the lobby or a post to lean against. You're good to go. Welcome to the winter meetings. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. The numbers to call. My Twitter handle is @GloBlair. Shai Davidi, Ben Nicholson-Smith, and Jamie Campbell are at the winter meetings for us. And they will have you covered all day long on the Sportsnet website. Keep you abreast of the trades that don't happen, which, quite frankly, more often than not are interesting, more interesting than the trades that do happen. Want to talk about a couple of things today. Roy Halladay as a Hall of Famer. I've made it pretty clear. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. A lot of that depends on the depth of the ballot. And quite frankly, a lot of that depends on who's left over from previous ballots. But I certainly think Roy Halladay will get in. I think he'll get in just as much as I thought Pedro Martinez would get in. So I don't have any doubt about that. I want to get your take on that, though. Is Roy Halladay a surefire Hall of Famer? And I also want to get your thoughts on Alex Anthopoulos' offseason so far. I know we talk about this a lot. I know we touch base on it. But lately, if you've read any of the articles or heard any of the interviews, you're starting to hear more and more about how good Brandon Morrow has looked, how it looks as if the Jays may not move a position player, how it looks like you may have to wait till mid-January for the free agent pitching market to shake out. I swear to God, it's almost as if Alex Anthopoulos is trying to dampen expectations. It reminds me a little bit of the winter in which he acquired Sergio Santos. Remember when he held that news conference and told everybody, listen, attendance has a direct impact on how much money we have to spend? I mean, it was a total buzzkill. And I remember telling him at the time, the last person I heard say anything like that at a winter meeting was Claude Brochu when he was president of the Montreal Expos. Of course, we know what happened last year at the winter meetings and around the winter meetings with Alex Anthopoulos. So I want to get your thoughts on that as well. I want to get your thoughts on Alex's winter so far. Do you think maybe the Jays are going to largely stand pat? And if that's the case, is that good enough for you? Steven Scarborough, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning, Jeff.
Hey, Steve.
At this point, I don't see a major deal happening with them. I think he'll do something minor, but I don't see it. The other thing with the Roy Halladay thing, I don't think he'll get in. Maybe his numbers aren't there, wins, but mainly because of the guys that vote. I mean, when you have people like Alomar and stuff like that, and they can't get in on the first ballot because somebody wants to hold them back for a year, it's just silly. So that record, I don't see Halladay getting in.
At all, or just in the first year?
I don't see him getting in at all.
Here's the thing with Roy Halladay, though, and you're right. Everybody approaches their Hall of Fame vote with a different set of variables, and everybody brings a different set of opinions to the table. Roy Halladay, though, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody in baseball who would say anything bad about him. He hasn't had any incidents with umpires. Certainly nothing like Robbie Alomar. He was a model citizen. He pitched a perfect game in the playoffs. There's a lot there that separates Roy Halladay from some of the other people. And I think there's no doubt he'll get in the Hall of Fame. I just don't know if it's a first ballot choice or not. I mean, I'm looking at some of the other candidates. That will be Mariano Rivera's year to go in the Hall of Fame, and he's certainly a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer.
But you're still going to get somebody that won't vote for him the first year.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to tell you the truth. Most of those are older voters, and they're either dying off or they're not voting anymore. You know,
yeah.
I'll tell you what. I think Mariano Rivera is going to challenge Tony Gwynn and Tom Seaver's standard for Tom Seaver's standard for highest percentage of votes. I absolutely think he will. You're right. I know there are people out there who believe that nobody should get in the first ballot. But I think those people are less and less. And I don't think that's Roy Halladay's issue. I think Roy Halladay gets in and maybe the second or third ballot. Again, it just depends on a lot of things. It depends on the depth of the ballot. As I said, Mariano Rivera's on it as well. It depends on how many players are left over from previous ballots. And there's going to be quite a backlog because of the way the Hall of Fame Hall of Fame voters have had such a difficult time dealing with some of the steroid guys like Piazza and Barry Bonds and players like that. There's going to be a large group of players. And if at some point baseball and Hall of Fame voters do make peace with the steroid era, and it will happen, then maybe Roy Halladay finds himself in a position where he's crowded out in some people's ballots. It's really hard to tell right now. I think he'll be in. I'm not certain he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But I absolutely think Roy Halladay will be in the Hall of Fame. Chris in Scarborough, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How's it going, Jeff?
Good, man. So are you beginning to get a sense that maybe Alex is going to stand pat this winter?
Yeah, I do, Jeff. I think he might make one or two moves, but actually, we're good at first base, second base. Ryan Gomes, he's got to stay.
Why?
Because he's good. He plays good defense.
What if he can't hit? What if he might play good defense, but what if he's Emilio Bonifacio?
Every team in baseball has to play good defense to win championships, Jeff, and I think you know that, right?
Down the middle,
we're strong.
I'm not willing to say that after seeing a guy for a couple of weeks, that's all. But continue.
Yeah, okay. As far as the outfield, I think we might make a few moves there, nothing major. Is we're fast in the outfield, we can catch the ball, right? I think we might make a couple of moves, right? As far as Roy Halladay,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important acquisition for the Jays. I've been thinking about this, Jeff. He's staying on in the organization. He's going to help a lot of pitchers out because he knows he's been there, done that, right? He's going to help out.
Well, I mean, I don't know what role he's going to have with the organization. Roy Halladay's never struck me as the type of guy who would want to get into coaching. Now, that may change, you know, because Pat Henkin spent the longest time as a minor league pitching coordinator because he wanted to be close to home. And Roy Halladay does live in Palm Harbor, so there's a chance, in Palm Harbor, Florida, so there's a chance, in fact, that he could be able to serve as some sort of roving pitching instructor with the Blue Jays, but I honestly don't see Roy Halladay ever becoming a major league coach. Certainly, let me rephrase that, certainly not in the next couple of years. Certainly not in the next couple of years. Russ in Jersey, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What's up, Russ?
How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend.
Before I talk about Roy Halladay, you know, as a Blue Jay fan since 77, the Bobby Cox, and I know obviously in the baseball world he'll be remembered as a Braves manager, and he should be, but, you know, as a Blue Jay fan at the time and, you know, through all those struggles in the late 70s and early 80s of building a team, you know, Bobby Cox was the manager in 85 that took us to our first, the Blue Jays to their first division title and the first time on the national stage, and national media was focused on a Blue Jay. So that brought back a lot of memories, you know. Mm-hmm. 84, mm-hmm. we had a good team, but the Tigers got off to that 35-5 start, and I still remember that year was the first series the Blue Jays had that there was national media attention because they were playing Detroit, and as good as Detroit was, the Blue Jays were number two. And I'll never forget Howard Johnson taking Roy Lee Jackson deep in the 11th inning the first time they met, and we lost. But 85, you go to 85, and you know, the anticipation, we're going to clinch the division in the Friday night game when they lose in the ninth inning when Butch Weiniger ties it with a homer off Henke on a pinch hit. And then the Saturday game, you come back and Doyle Alexander beats Joe Cowley and the Blue Jays win the division. So Bobby Cox, you know, did bring back some good memories for a Blue Jay fan. On the Halladay side, you know, I don't even understand. You listen to the shows here in the States, and there's a debate whether he'll make the Hall of Fame. That guy was, you know, he pitched on, you know, I don't want to say bad teams because there weren't a lot of bad teams, but there are a lot of mediocre teams. You know, he put all the, you know, people that say, well, you can't win on a bad team, you know, the Nolan Ryan guys, oh, you know. He was great on bad teams. He wanted the ball every day. He pitched complete games. He didn't put it in somebody else's hands, you know, to mess it up in the ninth inning. He went nine innings, and what a great pitcher. And I, you know, the great two things that I remember about Roy, first of all, I had the privilege of being at his no-hitter in the playoffs here in Cincinnati, and I sat about two rows from his wife. And
really?
You know, yeah, I was there. And it's funny because I went up to Brandy before the first pitch, and I go, and I always wore my Halladay Blue Jays jersey to all the Philly games, and people looked at me like I had nine heads. you know, I'd walk in, and they would go, is that a Rays jersey? What are you wearing this to this game? But anyways, I walked up there before the first pitch, and this whole time, I go, I waited for him to pitch a playoff game for a long time, and she looks at me, and she goes, I waited a little longer than you. So
that's awesome.
It was funny, but, you know, which game I remember as a Blue Jay is he had that emergency surgery.
Yes.
And he came back and he pitched against the White Sox and against Mark Burley, and he won 1-0. The game started at 7:05 and was over by about 7:30. It was unbelievable that. And, you know, but just a great pitcher, and he better make the Hall of Fame, not because I'm a Blue Jay fan, but he just – He was the dominating pitcher in the last 10 years in baseball.
Yeah, I'm with you, Russ, and I think, you know, maybe you agree with me too. I think you can draw a parallel between him and Pedro Martinez. You know, I really can. Pedro pitched in Montreal, but won a Cy Young with a team that wasn't very good. I think you can draw a parallel between him and Pedro Martinez as far as the Hall of Fame goes. Absolutely.
Right, but the difference is, you know, Pedro, first of all, Pedro, what helped him was his personality also. You know, Pedro was a big personality guy. And also, you know, what helps Pedro, and Pedro was unbelievable. He doesn't need any help. But what helped Pedro was also that he brought the World Series back to Boston that hadn't won in all those years. And, you know, and Boston is a city where you get the national media attention more than Toronto. So, you know, I just hope for Halladay he gets in because I really, really think he deserves it.
Yeah, Russ, I appreciate the call. Thank you. And, look, I think most of us agree that he'll be in the Hall of Fame. The first ballot is going to be awfully difficult. And as I explained, a lot of that will have to do with the depth of the ballot as much as anything. But I can't for the life of me, see Roy Halladay being in a position where he, you know, where like Jack Morris, he's kind of hanging in for that final year. I don't see that happening. I think people have a different point of view about players or pitchers who dominated during the steroid era or at the end of the steroid era and managed to do so without ever being implicated. People will look at Roy Halladay, will look at the time he pitched, will look at what was going on in the game, we'll look at the fact that he was untainted by it, and that is going to count for a lot in the minds of especially the younger voter or the voter in their late 30s, early 40s. I think there's a lot at work for Roy Halladay here getting into the Hall of Fame. I really do. I think his candidacy is pretty strong, and I don't know. He could, again, it depends on the depth of the ballot. It depends who else is carried over from the year before. He could be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I certainly think that he will be one of those pitchers who goes in on maybe the third or fourth ballot. I do not see him being finding himself in the position Jack Morris is in, where you're in your last year of eligibility, and you know you're looking at each year, you're looking to just increase your percentage vote incrementally. I don't see that happening at all. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. My Twitter handle is @GlobeBlair. Couple of baseball questions before we shift to hockey. Roy Halladay, Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer. I want your opinion on that. Alex Anthopoulos, is he going to have a Hall of Fame offseason? Or are you beginning to think he's going to stand pat? Back with your calls on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
What the hell is this? It sounds like a game show intro. Yeah, I know it. I know it's the Allman Brothers. 416-870 just strikes me as if it's a like 70s game show intro, you know. And now here with the dating game. Anyhow, 416-870-0590, *5. You don't even know what the dating game was. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590 @GlobeBlair is my Twitter handle. Roy Halladay, Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer. That's one of your exam questions this morning. The second exam question, this is multiple choice. The second exam question is about Alex Anthopoulos. Are you expecting a big move? Are you expecting a small move? Are you expecting no moves from Alex Anthopoulos? Are you expecting that Alex Anthopoulos may, in fact, end up standing pat this offseason? Eddie and Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff?
Hey, man, what's up?
I have a question before I go on with my thought of the winter meetings. Can I give a nickname for Shai Davidi?
Is it better than Shai Diggity, Wilner's nickname for him, which is just...
No, it's just mainly just his nickname.
Okay.
I mean his first name.
Okay, what?
The Shyster.
I don't get it.
It's like the Hulkster from...
Yeah, but it's got a bad connotation, Shyster. I don't think you want to call it.
Oh, it's got a bad connotation. Well, I just thought of that, but...
That's okay.
All right.
Maybe we'll stick with Shai Diggity. I'm not certain the Shyster's going to go over well with Shai. Good all try, right. though, Eddie. Good try. You're a grand prize winner. What do you got to say about Roy Halladay?
Well, you know what I say about him yesterday, but I wanted to talk about what I thought of Alex Anthopoulos at the winter meetings.
Yep.
The more I think about it, you know what? I don't know if he's going to do anything because you know what? He's not looking for a plan B for pitching because the more I hear about Tanaka not being, you know, posted for the, you know, for the bidding, if he does.
Well, he is actually. I should inform my listeners that the president of the Rakuten Eagles is in fact expected to be at the winter meetings.
Okay.
So it looks very much as if Masahiro Tanaka will post. And now the question is, Eddie, and thanks for bringing this up, because I've got to tell you, I spoke to Alex Anthopoulos on Sunday, and I asked him, on Friday, and I said, do you know how this posting system is going to work? And he admitted, you know, the basics of it, the $20 million offer, you don't lose the money if you don't sign the guy, all that stuff. But he said, Jeff, I don't know how they're going to work it. Is it going to be lowest record gets first shot at the guy? Is it going to go by... league? Is it going to alternate American League 1 year, National League next year gets the shot? I mean, who knows? If in fact it goes according to record and that the team with the worst record gets a first shot at him, that really plays into the Jays' hands.
But don't you think, but before a case, it didn't happen if he didn't get posted, do you think maybe the Blue Jays should have thought of a plan B? Like, because I heard yesterday that the Pirates are still waiting and waiting for A.J. Burnett, you know, to come back, and they're talking to other teams about a possible plan B. Do you think maybe he should, you know, thought of that in case, you know, Tanaka didn't get posted?
I think the whole problem with the with Tanaka's posting, and you know, I'm not certain how many people know this, that the Rakuten Eagles, the team that he plays for, has, and this is probably way more about Japanese baseball than any of us want to know, but apparently they're essentially partially publicly owned, and there are shareholders and stakeholders in the team, and the president of the team made the comment, gosh, I want to say 2 weeks ago, that before anything was done, he would have to satisfy the needs of his shareholders. Now, that may, I don't know if that's a translation issue. Maybe he was talking about shareholders. He was talking about other members of the ownership consortium. But it's a different ownership structure with that particular team. And there are different issues with that particular team than other Japanese teams. So I'm just throwing that out there. But I think the fact that the guy plans on being down at the winter meetings is probably a good sign if you're interested in him being posted. Jonathan in Waterloo. Sorry, Jonathan in London. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, good morning, Jeff. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you and welcome.
First off, Roy Halladay, yeah, slam dunk for the Hall of Fame. I agree with you. I don't see it as a first ballot. I think it's going to take a couple, if not more. You already touched on why. I think we are trending towards, you know, the old money, you know, falling off and the new blood getting in there. But that hasn't happened yet. So I really think it's going to take a little while. His numbers speak for himself, not to mention his pedigree off the field. I also agree. I don't think he's much of a coach. He was very much to himself, very disciplined. I don't see him playing much of a role with the Jays going forward. But anyways, Alex Anthopoulos. I think the beginning of the end with him was the trade that he made. There was so much hype around that trade, and I never really understood it. He was trading for one guy, and that was Reyes. Burley was a guy who could pitch a no-hitter one day and get blown up the next game, real wild card. Same with Johnson, the amount of baggage that he had for his injuries. He's kind of like a Brandon Morrow. You just don't know what you're going to get with the injuries. And what that trade did, though, was show you that the city got so excited and was ready to throw full support behind the team and pack the place, and then they just never hit where they were. They never hit stride. But that leads me to ask, why couldn't we be players in the Robinson Cano sweepstakes? We have the money, or we could have the money. Why not put a, you know, the best possible team out there, be a major player in the AL East, get the best players, you know, have the attendance that Anthopoulos wants, you know, and we go from there. I don't think he's going to do much. I think my prediction is that the DNR Navarro signing and press conference, that was going to be the big splash of the winter, and I really hate to say it.
Yeah, Robinson Cano, yeah, it was pretty clear the Jays have a 5-year limit on contracts. That, you know, Robinson Cano's not signing 5 years anyplace. It doesn't matter how much money you give him. He was looking for a contract that would carry him through the rest of his career. This contract with Seattle carries him through 41. Sorry.
Why limit that? Why have
well, that? Well, we've had that discussion. I think it's ludicrous. You know, philosophically, I agree 100% with it. You know, if I, in a perfect world, frankly, in a perfect world, there would be no long-term contracts. Everybody would be playing for the next year. But in a slightly less perfect world, you know, I'd put a limitation of 3 years on a pitcher's contract, 5 years on a position player's contract. I just don't trust pitchers. Pitchers get hurt. Money gets wasted. Having said all that, I can't go into an off season where every team has got a crap load of money and a lot of teams think they're on the cusp of contending and hamstring myself. I can't handcuff myself by saying, you know what, I'm only going to offer 5-year contracts. I can't do that to my GM. To me, it's an issue. I don't think Robinson Cano is going to sign here. I don't think there was a slightest chance in hell of Robinson Cano even thinking of signing here. But I know for a fact he's not going to sign here for 5 years. And that's to me, it's an unnecessary handcuff on your general manager. And here's the other thing. You may have that philosophy, okay? That doesn't mean you advertise it. Our organization may have a philosophy that we're not giving out more than 5-year contracts, but we don't talk about it. Part of it, I think, is Alex, the way Alex Anthopoulos works. Alex Anthopoulos doesn't like wasting his time. He doesn't like dicking around with people, asking them for a 10-year contract. He doesn't like talking to agents about players he knows he's got no chance in hell of signing. Well, that's fine. I understand that. I understand he doesn't want to waste his time. But you don't have to say that. You don't have to remove yourself from the equation. And there are people out there who are saying, look, Jeff, come on. If he thought that he could sign Robinson Cano, he'd go to Paul Beeston and say, Paul, listen, I mean, give up. Give it up. You got to go 8 years in this guy. We can get him signed. I'm not certain about that. I used to think that. I'm not certain about that. Alan, in the cab in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Jeff. Now, first of all, there is no such thing as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Will he get in the first ballot? That's another question, too.
Mm-hmm.
I say no. He only has 67 complete games. That's not enough. Jack Morris had 108. Dave Steep had well over 200. I guess it's because of the complete game is an endangered species, but still, that's not enough.
Well, Alan, in this era, 67 complete games looks like 300. I mean, that's really going to be one of the underpinnings of his case. I understand what you're saying, Alan. But Roy Halladay did one thing in this era that really separated him from other starting pitchers, and that was throw complete games. That is something that when people sit down to look at the Hall of Fame, they're going to say about Roy Halladay, this guy was cut from a different cloth. This guy did things that other people didn't do during his time. That is a huge selling point for a guy's candidacy. If you're someone who literally, it's almost as if you're swimming upstream. Think about Roy Halladay. Think about where he pitched, hitter's ballpark. And the American League East, for a lot of those years in the American League East. So hitter's ballpark, American League East, a team that was not always a contender, against guys who were juicing. I think we can safely say that. At a time where pitchers broke down, where nobody pitched complete games, think about what Roy Halladay did. Think about how Roy Halladay was the outlier, how much Roy Halladay went against sort of the conventional wisdom or the conventional way the game was pitched and played. That is going to resonate with a lot of people because, you know what, then you get into that sort of odd, difficult to quantify thing, in air quotes, thing about a guy that makes him special. Roy Halladay has that. Roy Halladay will be in. I don't know if he'll get in the first ballot, but he's not going to have to wait a long time to get into the Hall of Fame. The Toronto Maple Leafs have the day off before facing the LA Kings. Dion Phaneuf has a phone hearing, I think it's around 11 o'clock today after that hit from behind on Kevin Miller. Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC is going to join us. We're going to talk about Dion Phaneuf. We're going to talk about the James Neal suspension. And Jerome Iginla returns to Calgary. That ahead on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.